kamikaze. Roman no kamikaze. We blaze and burn with the Most High. We hear the sound of our spirit rise. Wait a minute, baby, there's another one on the horizon.
Hey, there's Pale Fire Union. That was done live here on Liquid Lunch, I think last Friday. Fantastic. Nice piece of music there. Thank you, Chris, for putting that on. Hey, we've got Sanjay Berman here now. Do everything they tell you not to do if you want to succeed. So we're going to get into that. But just we're just chatting about Yahoo.
Right.
During the song break. And, yeah, I was just going to say that I thought that they were in trouble. You were just saying how much trouble they're in. They've been offering these free seminars in the city. Free breakfast, free coffee, free speakers. You know, and you just have to RSVP by email and you go down and they trying to educate you. But, of course, the whole
educate you in what, though?
Well, e-marketing, I mean, everyone's got a different theme to it, right? And helping people and people in the industry or in some industry that, and then of course the underlying message is, you know, do business with Yahoo.
Oh, right? I see. Okay.
You see what I mean?
Right, right.
So, but I just thought this is a not really an effective approach. I thought they're spending a lot of money,
right.
Which is, I love it because that money's going to pay for my croissant and
right.
Coffee, which I totally appreciate, and they're always at a big hotel, so that's a big expense. But I just thought this is
Stock is at $12, so
and you were saying they turned down an offer from Microsoft for
47 billion. I think it was 47 billion, and then 6 months later, the stock is now $12. So I think the CEO has stepped down yesterday.
Well, maybe somebody told them not to take the offer, and they did the opposite.
Or they were told not to take it, and they went along with that. They should have done the opposite.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, okay, well, let's get into this then, Sanjay, because it sounds a little bit counterintuitive, and yet it worked for George Costanza.
Yeah, actually, there were two Seinfeld episodes that I like to call upon when I'm talking to audiences. One was that he does everything opposite to what he would normally do, and he gets these great results.
Yeah.
The other one was where Seinfeld accidentally loses $5, and in his pocket he finds $5.
It all evens out for him.
It all evens out. So do you remember that episode?
I totally do.
Yeah. So he starts throwing a $5 bill out. Sure enough, somebody walks in and gives him the $5 that they owed him from last week. And it really works. If you ever let go and stop trying to use logic, you'll actually see that work. So,
okay, really?
Absolutely.
What, doing the opposite or throwing money out the window?
Both. I think if you start doing the opposite of what people tell you to do, you'd actually start to go with what your instincts are. And once you start to listen to your instincts, the more you listen to your instincts, the more you hear it louder and louder and are able to just follow along with it.
Well, can you give us an example of that?
An example of that would be starting the publishing company at a time the publishing world is changing. Bookstores are not selling as many. Amazon sells the most books right now, but you're seeing more downloads. You're seeing more self-publishing type of, you know, situations. So we started when everybody advised us against it, and that led to us going against the current, hearing objections from everybody. And 3 years later, we have the secret authors. We're in 8 countries. We own the distribution. We're doing quite well. But had we listened, I don't know what I'd be doing right now. I'd be, you know, kind of bored.
Okay, so, you know, that prompts me to ask the question, what was it? Obviously something in your gut or somewhere in your being was telling you to go ahead and start a publishing company, despite what people were telling you. Like,
right.
Can you describe what that was, what your process was, what was going on with you personally to go ahead and start Berman Books?
Well, I had left the film world. I was producing movies and TV shows. And then I left that world completely, and I ended up becoming a master hypnotherapist, opening a clinic. The clinic was more free to anybody who needed it. alcoholics, smokers, weight loss, all that kind of stuff. I really got something out of that. I really liked it. And then I got the idea that people don't have to pay for it. They have that ability within themselves. So I started to think of an idea of publishing books that would be focused on changing your mindset by the end of the book and seeing the acceleration in yourself within a day. So we got started, and I went to the first three people that I could think of to ask for money. And I said, if any one of these three turn me down, then I won't do it. Mm-hmm. All three wrote checks. And again, without a contract, without any formal kind of business plan or anything, again, something that they were doing that people would have suggested that they don't do. Mm-hmm. And me starting the company when everyone was advising us not to. Started putting it together piece by piece.
Okay. I think the other thing that rings really loud and clear as you read the book is that really it's about persistence.
That's exactly it.
And do you want to just talk about that a little bit?
Well, persistence is funny enough that I think you need persistence for any aspect of anything you do in life. Mm-hmm. But it's the least talked about. We talk about expecting things. We talk about curing things. We talk about all sorts of different sort of modalities to getting there. But nothing will happen without success. Absolutely nothing. Nothing will happen without persistence.
Or success. So, I find this interesting. I've read The Art of Persistence. It's a great book. And
thank you.
You know, you're welcome. You know I love your book.
Wait, is that your book too?
Yeah, that's his book. Yeah.
Okay.
So what I find fascinating is your ability to walk into an office or to call the CEO of a major corporation and just say, hey, listen, this is what I want to do. Can you give me some money? I don't know anyone else who would do that. I really don't. And you actually are successful in getting money, the money to help your projects, money to do. I don't think that's a skill that most people have.
You're right. Most people think it's nuts to even suggest an idea like that when I go up to them and say, why don't you just call the person? Funny enough, I just called the co-founder of MTV in New York, and we're having lunch in a day or two because of an idea I suggested.
Okay.
But usually you would have to go through development. You'd have to, you know, development to production and so on and so forth. Maybe I was born without that filter of knowing that I should be cautious or knowing that I should be embarrassed or whatever it may be. I don't know what it is, but I've never really had an issue with walking up to somebody and saying, I need help. Here's what I need. Can you help me? I think that you have to, if you're having a problem doing that, you have to equalize that in your mind. So when someone says that I'm not achieving what it is I want to achieve, you have to look at what is it that's stopping them exactly. Most times they don't even know. So they'll say to you, I'm afraid. You're afraid of what? Well, I'm afraid that I won't be able to do it. Yeah, but that's not telling me what you're afraid of. Well, I'm afraid that I might go broke. Okay, then what? And if you narrow it down, fear is actually just an illusion in people's minds that's built from the conscious, and it really has no substance whatsoever. So if there is someone that I'm nervous about calling, I would equalize that. What's the worst that's going to happen? They're going to hang up on me. Was it personal? No. Will they remember after they've hung up on me? No. So what have I really got to lose? But by not calling, I know that I have a 99% chance of losing an opportunity.
So if you're in that situation and you've decided this is what I want to do and I'm going to do whatever it takes to get it and somebody hangs up the phone on you, are you going to call them back?
If they hang up the phone on me, it depends why I called them.
Right.
So if I called them because I want to work with them, no, because...
Now you don't want to work with them.
Not so much that. It's that I don't think that they're able to see life the same way I do, so we're not going to get along anyway. Every time I go to do something, they'll probably try and stop it because... You know, they'll use logic or whatever it may be. So in that case, no. If it's something that, you know, I don't know, give me an example of something else other than my professional life, I might call them back and I might use the, I think we got disconnected, so I thought I'd call you right back, you know, something like that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think often it depends on the situation too. I mean, Randy just tells a story. He was on a show, how he got into, he was cast in the movie 72. And he did it through persistence.
Right.
He did his thing, and then he was on his way back to Montreal, and he turned the car around, and he went back and said, look, I really want to be in this movie.
But at the time that he was driving, he was evaluating in his head, I think I should be back there. I think there's something that I haven't done to get it.
Right.
And then he starts going into the next step, which is, okay, well, if I do go back, I may look foolish. I may, you know, they may close the door on me. But what have I really got to lose? Because they're not hiring me anyway. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden he's thinking near the third part of it, if I don't go back, I'm going to have a problem sleeping tonight. I feel that there's something I need to say to them. Mm-hmm. Whether they listen or not, I need to get it out. He turns the car around. The minute he turns the car around, he's upped his odds again. Because a no is actually just a temporary answer to a long-term solution. Nobody wants to say no. They say no out of fear of what is unknown. Mm-hmm. So if you can show them a path is laid down for them, they'll say yes. People want to make their lives easier. And if you're going to do something that makes their lives easier, they'll say yes. But if you don't demonstrate how their lives are going to be easier, it'll always be a no first. But that's not a firm answer. There's no period at the end of no, ever.
Okay. So we've talked about a few things here. You've mentioned, you know, that people approach things logically, and sometimes that's the wrong approach.
Correct.
If they want to get to where they're going to go.
Correct.
We've talked about doing the opposite of what you want. We're talking about persistence, talking about that gut feeling, you know, following, really paying attention to that gut feeling. Because I think, you know, using Randy as an example again, it was that gut feeling. Got to turn the car around and go back.
Right.
And, you know, what does that tell us about, I kind of asked this with my tongue in my cheek, but not really. What does it tell us about reality? And also the fact that you've published all these books by some of the people that were in the movie The Secret. You know, what is the what is reality? Because so many of us are still operating on the assumption that the world is logical, that it's a Newtonian cause and effect type of world. But you know, with your experience, with your background as a hypnotherapist and as a publisher of the stuff that you do, you know, what can you tell us, or what's your opinion about, like, what is the nature of reality, and how do we best deal with it to achieve whatever we want to achieve?
Well, are you asking, like, what is the difference between logical and following your instinct? I don't quite understand.
I don't know. It's like...
he doesn't know what he's asking.
I'm just saying, like, you know, how does reality work? Like, if it's not about cause and effect, what is it about?
I think it is about cause and effect.
Yeah.
I think it is about, you know, for every action, there's a reaction. For every up, there's a down. I think that's... The basis of life isn't to lead a balanced life. I think that's impossible. I don't think it is. I directed a movie called The Search for the Balanced Life. It has the Dalai Lama, the people from The Secret, and it goes through a journey of trying to find out, does it actually exist? Mm-hmm. So we talked from, you know, bartenders to the Dalai Lama to see what the answer is. It's not about having that thought of fear, that thought of elation, or that thought of depression. It's about what you do with that thought. Because as you know, for every up, there's a down. It has to happen. Mm-hmm. So if you're depressed, it means that you're not equalizing that with the positive that is taking place right then and there that you totally denied seeing in your life. Mm-hmm. So if you're very happy, you have to understand there's something going on right now that's not a happy situation in your life. You just choose not to see it. So if you stop living your life in ups and downs and start to live a more equilibrium sort of lifestyle, you will see that your life becomes much more easier. Your intuition becomes much more easier to listen to.
But there's going to be people that are going to say depression is, which is a down, right?
Yeah.
Is the cause. It's not the effect. Because you're saying that's the effect. You're saying, how do I live even? Well, some people are going to say, you know what? I can't live even. I'm down. I'm depressed.
Well,
and that's the cause of problems.
Depression is based on an illusion. So when you have an illusion in your mind that everything is going wrong, you're seeing the end result of that thought becoming an emotion called depression. Mm-hmm. Think of that emotion too many times and you actually rewire your brain to chemically act in that sort of way, and thereby drugs and all that kind of stuff being needed. But really, I've consulted with depressed people, and once you talk to them from the other side saying, well, what's happening in your life that's positive? or what happens if imminent doom comes in your world? What would be the worst thing? Mm-hmm. They don't have an answer for that. Their mood has to go back up.
I believe that depression is the effect of feeling helpless, whereas success, and this is for me, success is the result of feeling powerful, and it's not necessarily balanced for me. The feeling of success is almost a controlled excitement when you discover something you want to do and you place a lot of emphasis on achieving that goal. It grows, that excitement grows, and as long as you can control it and focus on what it is you want to achieve, eventually it's almost like a mini explosion and it actually just happens. But there's a lot of effort that goes into it. There's a lot of excitement here, but it's controlled. It has to be controlled and focused, like a powerful energy.
Very true. But see, that's still another illusion, because the minute you meet someone who's more powerful than you or done more than you have that you've wanted to do, you start to feel down again, saying that I haven't accomplished enough or I'm not as powerful as I thought. So once again, you're leading an up and down sort of lifestyle. And that's not to say you shouldn't, because that's a normal human reaction to things. What you have to acknowledge is that I'm feeling very powerful in myself right now. Why am I feeling powerful? What is it that can bring this feeling on over and over and over again? Well, it's because I've written a good book and I practice what I preach.
Right.
Very few people can do that. So that's why I feel good about myself. When I meet someone who's done more than me, who has written 5 best-selling books, who speaks all over the world and makes, you know, a ton more than I do, will I start to feel depressed being around that person because I haven't done that? No. Because what separates me from that person that makes me feel good about myself is that I've written a good book, that I practice what I preach, and that's all I have to focus on.
Right.
So you've equalized that emotion so that you don't go up and down. Make sense?
Yeah, totally makes sense.
Hey, you know, these days, and I keep thinking back to what happened on the Chris show last Thursday here, but these days, of course, there's lots of talk in the news about economic doom and gloom. Like, I can't believe it. It's like these guys are trying to create a recession, right? They started, to me, I noticed that they started to talk negatively about the economy last November, about a year ago, last November, December, and now it's manifested into a full-blown stock market crisis. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on that and how people as individuals can deal with that.
Well, I think that people are being drawn into the energy that we're trying to push people into believing. There's no recession if you don't want there to be a recession. There is no stock market crash and people jumping off of buildings if you don't want that. You'll never lose money unless you sell. So as long as you keep your money in there, and everything is cyclical, real estate, stock market, gas prices, everything is cyclical. So instead of panicking at the point that you see it go down, just relax. It's going to go back up. It has to. For everything in the world, for what goes up must come down. It's the same way in our lives. It's the same way in the world. It's the same way in our bodies. It's the same way in our emotions. It does not deviate. That rule will always exist. So if you start to believe that, and there are people who profit from the recession. There are people who are very influential that get great buys and wait for that recession so they can snap it up and then wait for the market to come back up. You can't fall victim to that. Mm-hmm. You know, Bob Proctor says that I don't listen to the news in the morning. It's depressing. Why should I? I'd rather pick up a good book or, you know, read something inspirational, even a paragraph that's inspirational, and the news that I need to know, I'll find out about. But everything else, I don't need to be told first thing in the morning how depressing the world is.
Yeah. You know, I think that's a good point, because I think that for some reason, whatever reason, the people aren't buying into this fear that the media is trying to create as much, like this time, whenever the, I don't know when the
that's
last
why
time
Canada
was.
Hasn't really felt the full effect.
Yeah.
Because we don't choose not to.
Or maybe even the U.S. is, I don't know what it's like in the U.S. I haven't been down there, but it's like people, nobody's really, everybody's
just fine.
Everybody's
yes.
fine. And I see help wanted signs everywhere, you know, so.
Yeah.
Actually, it's funny, because in the mall, coming here, I saw 2 help wanted signs in stores, And in a flash of a second, I thought to myself, wow, so they're actually hiring? They must need people to fill in the gaps there.
There's business.
There's
so
business available, yeah.
Yeah. So maybe, you know, I don't know. I'm getting the sense, and I haven't found really anybody that's really panicking. And, maybe, you know, that's my personal sphere. But, you know, people are just
And it can continue
on.
Forward doing that. Just keep focused on yourself and your end result. What is it that you want? What is it that you want to attain out of your life? You can do it. And for every situation that's given to you, there's an opportunity there. Mm-hmm. But you have to equalize it with the positive. So if there is a stock market crash, what's the opportunity that's available? It's always one there. You know, the banks are fine here. The banks are going to be okay in the States. People need a place to put their money. You know, the housing market will be fine. Cars will be around. Just relax. It's okay.
That's a nice positive message. So Sanjay, so this book here, this particular book, who is it really targeted for? What was your particular inspiration for this particular book?
Originally, I wrote it for anybody who's trying to make it in the world, career-wise. But it turns out that people were using this in their personal lives as well, and I didn't know that. I thought that the age group I was writing for was an older demographic of you know 35 to 45 years of age. Turns out that wasn't true either. It turns out 24-year-olds are reading this and going out into the workforce and trying to get a job or things like that. So it really has a very large demographic to it because it's very simply written. Trust me on that. You know, no big three-syllable words in there. And it's very conversational. Mm-hmm. I kind of like that style.
Yeah,
so
too.
It's very easy to understand, and there's no sophisticated theories or anything like that.
It's also very personal. I find your writing is very personal.
Well, I tried that. Everyone writes about their successes and their victories, and I just thought, you know, it makes people seem like they're perfect and they had no hard times. Mm-hmm. So I wrote about all my hard times and how I messed up and what the lesson was.
Yeah, and you know what? I think that's probably one of the most enduring qualities about your books.
Thank you.
Your books, you're welcome, and it's that they're very relatable, and it allows your readers to understand that it's okay to make mistakes. You
right.
can make mistakes, and you can still succeed, and that's a really important message.
Right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, it's like...
And he laughs about it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and you laugh about it, which is great.
I cry
so there's
otherwise.
A sense of humor there as well.
Can you tell us about one of your most horrific...
Most embarrassing
or,
moments?
Yeah, entertaining mistakes. Because usually, it's horrible at the time, but then you look back and you go,
you
oh,
laugh.
Yeah, that was funny.
Yeah. Getting yelled at by Shirley MacLaine was something that was really embarrassing at the time because she is a woman that even at 73, I talked to her last week, she could still put you over her knee. You know, I mean, she's a very feisty, blunt lady, and I guess she just has no time for BS. You know, she's just too old.
No, wait a second. When did she yell at you? Was it during the interview or?
No. It was back when I was in grade 10. I snuck onto set when she was doing a movie called Use People, and I got into her trailer, and she told everyone to leave, and it was just her and I, and I said I wanted to be a director, and she said, well, what have you directed? And I said, nothing. And she said, what have you written? And I said, nothing. And she said, what have you acted in? And I said, nothing. And she said, by your age, I'd done like 3 movies, so what are you waiting for? And I kind of looked down and put my hands in my pocket, and she yelled at me saying, take your hands out of your pocket, look at me when I talk to you. I kind of didn't know what to say
okay.
at that point. Exactly. And then she said, you better hurry up because time is passing you by. There's no time to just sit and relax. So if you want to be the next Spielberg, you have to work towards that
mm-hmm.
now.
Mm-hmm.
And I left that trailer feeling, 2 feet high, thought about it and got to work. Like started to really seriously work because I realized what I thought I had done and what people were patting me on the back for wasn't even close to what I should be doing in my mind to where it is I want to go.
Hmm.
And that was also the night of a parent-teacher interview. So my parents had dropped me off there and gone to my parent-teacher interview. So when I went to the school, you know, then I was yelled at by my teacher. So it was just a great night, you know. Talk about depressed.
Now, where was that? Because... Where was that? Was
Toronto.
That in Toronto?
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, because well, I think I either read that story or it was part of the interview I heard
yes.
you do with Shirley MacLaine. And it just struck me as being, first of all, how the heck... First of all, it sounds like a daunting task for somebody from Toronto to, say, want to be the next Steven Spielberg
yeah.
Or even an actor or an actress, a big Hollywood, whatever. So, because it seems to me it's almost like, you know, and this is an obvious question, really, because, of course, it's that goes for anybody in any situation. You're in this situation, you want to get to that situation, and it doesn't look so easy. You know, and it seems like you want to be in that situation, the Hollywood scene. You got to be not just in Hollywood, but you got to be somehow in that milieu of people.
Well, if you think of it the way you're explaining it, then yeah. But I don't think anything would be done if you explained it and followed through in that way. Barack Obama didn't become president because he looked at it and said, wow, there's over 100 million people I've got to get to, and I'm a black man who doesn't come from, you know, a wealthy family, and I don't know what I'm going to do, and I still got to form a team, and then I got to raise money, and then I got to go around the country and hopefully say everything they want to hear. Oh my God, what a task. He became president because he kept his eye focused on the ball. That's it. He didn't look over at what other people were doing. He didn't look over to see what he should be doing. He did what he felt was important to do as step one, then step two, then step three, all the way to step 10. They put blinders on horses when they run for a reason. Because if the horses started to see the other horses, it would get spooked and start running in circles. So if you put blinders, all the horse can see is the finish line. And that's all they run towards. I tell actors this all the time. When an actor walks into an audition room and they see another brunette that looks exactly like them, they're feeling like, you know, this is hopeless. What chance do I have? When you keep focused on your end result, you keep focused on what it is that you want and stay true to your value system and follow your instinct, you cannot lose. Under any circumstances, you cannot lose. Mm. If you notice where the McCain... campaign went dry was at the point that he started to take shots at Barack instead of focusing on the key issues. That was where everything started to go all over the place. Barack never strayed from his message. Even when he was asked about McCain, he quickly went right back to his message. And if you look at how Clinton got out of the whole situation with Jennifer Flowers and Monica Lewinsky and all that, they put big signs up around the campaign office. It's about the economy, stupid. So whenever somebody would ask him about the affairs or somebody would ask him about how his wife is dealing with it, it's about the economy. He'd bring it right back to the economy. Focusing on the economy is what won the election for Clinton. Focusing on the key issues is what brought Barack into where he is. So if he can win the election in the United States and become the most powerful man in the world, who worked out of a dorm-style room in Washington, then there is no excuse for anybody out there not to achieve what it is they want unless they're focusing on what the next guy is doing.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Sounds right.
Absolutely. And what I like about what you just said is that you have to stay focused and work within your own morals and values, I believe you said?
Yes.
Yeah. And I like that as well because it keeps you focused. It keeps
yes.
reminding you of what you want to achieve and how you want to achieve it. And that's
yes.
really important.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm communicating with my hand signals to my crew over here.
What's this man doing?
Okay, Sanjay. So, listen, we're just about out of time here, but is there anything else that we haven't asked you that...
Well, you can pick up the book now. It's available in stores, Barnes, Borders, Walmart, Costco,
Walmart.
Chapters, Indigo. Well, we like to service everybody.
Nice.
And or you can go to hear interviews and get interactive on BurmanBooks.com, which is BurmanBooks. Thank you.
Okay, beautiful.
So did you say chapters? Did you say online, Amazon.com?
You can get it at Amazon as well, yeah.
Okay, just in case the weather's cold, you don't want to go outside.
By the way, we had Joe Vitale on here, a month ago?
Yeah.
About a month ago?
Yeah.
Today
a month
he's
ago.
Number 15, and I think by 5 p.m. he's planning on going number one on Amazon.
So, you're kidding
this
me.
Book, this
yeah,
book.
Yeah, Expect
with
Miracles.
Berman Books.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So.
Expect Miracles. That's great. So you can pick up Do Everything They Tell You Not to Do if you want to succeed by Sanjay Berman. And also, Expect Miracles by Joe Vitale on Amazon.com.
And I'm sure there's a bunch of other books you can check out at BermanBooks.com.
Thank you very much.
Right? Okay. Yeah. Sanjay, thanks.
Thank you
for coming in again today.
Thank you.
Great to have this chat with you. Okay, so we're going to take a little break now. We're going to play some, I don't know, Chris is going to do something, then we're going to come back with Boy in Orbit, probably play some of that in a song or two, and come back with Boy in Orbit right after this. Liquid Lunch, thatchannel.com.
Hook me up onto the power line, cause I got watts to spare. I'm gonna light the lantern, come on. Hook me up onto the power line, cause I got watts to spare. I'm gonna light the lantern, come on.